Welcome to Cultivating Hearts Radio Ministry. Wow, 2014 still. A couple weeks, I guess. I am so amazed at how fast time goes. I can't even believe it's 2014. We just thank you so much for tuning in to Terrorize Cultivating Hearts Ministry. And today we are going to be journeying in Matthew 17 and verses 14 through 22.
Very exciting passage. The boy, depending on which Bible you look at, some will call it the epileptic boy healed, and some will call it the demon-possessed boy. We'll explain that as we get into the passage. But in order to set the context, we need to go back and look at where they've been. Okay, so Jesus and Peter, James, and John had been up on the mountain, and possibly we believe, and I want to make a correction, I may have said the Mount of Olives. I hope I was clear in saying, I can't remember though, and I wanted to clarify, Mount Hermon most likely was the mountain, and I couldn't remember if I said that correctly or not, and so I wanted to make sure I corrected that. But they were up, and they were experiencing the transfiguration, the glory of the Lord revealed, and Jesus talking with Moses and Elijah and preparing for Jerusalem, and Peter wanting to build the tabernacle, the three shelters for each of them, and then with God's voice speaking from heaven, you need to listen, this is my son whom I love and I'm well pleased. So they've had this huge glory moment, and the disciples were afraid, and Jesus touched them and said, you know, come with me, I'm going to make you, not to be afraid. And so here we are, they're coming off the mountain, and this is where our Bible passage begins. So we need to understand they've been on the high holy hill. Mm-hmm. This is important. This is critical in understanding what happens in this passage. So in Matthew 17, 14 through 21, the Bible tells us, so Jesus and the disciples were coming down, and as they came upon a crowd, a man approached Jesus, and he knelt before him. And he said, Lord, have mercy on my son. He has seizures. And he suffers greatly. He often falls in the fire or into the water. I took him to your disciples, but your disciples were not able to heal him. And Jesus said, oh, you believing and rebellious generation, how long have I been with you, and how long will I have to put up with this? Bring the boy here, he said. Well, they brought him to him, and Jesus rebuked the demon, and it came out of his body. And the boy was healed in that exact moment. The disciples went to Jesus in private, and they asked him, why weren't we able to cast out the demon? Oh, you of little faith, Jesus said, I tell you the truth. If you have the faith of a small mustard seed, you can move this mountain. You could say, move from here to there, and it will move, for nothing is impossible for you. Then Jesus and the disciples left and went to Galilee, and Jesus said to them, the Son of Man is going to be betrayed into the hands of men, and they will kill him. But on the third day, he will raise to life. The disciples then were filled with great grief. May God honor the telling of this passage, Matthew 17, 14 through 21. So here we have this coming off the mountain, and the first thing that as I was going through, it's just like, it's the contrast. It's almost like a comparison and contrast I'd like for us to look at. So I want us to think about last month and what we talked about in the transfiguration. And then I want you to think about today with this passage. And let's just talk through, what was it like for them at the transfiguration? What were they experiencing? What were they seeing? What did they know? What happened at the transfiguration?
They saw Jesus in all of his glory.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. What else? What did they see? Who was with Jesus?
Moses and mm-hmm. Elijah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. And did they have conversation occurring?
They were visiting, yes.
Okay. And what were they talking about? Do you guys remember?
I don't.
What was to come?
Yeah, Jerusalem. What was Jesus was to do mm-hmm. in Jerusalem? Okay. And I want you to be thinking through and so that you can understand. Okay, so up on the mountain, they're seeing the glory of the Lord. Mm-hmm. They're seeing the shine of his face. They're seeing the miraculous of Moses and Elijah.
Right.
And knowing who Moses and Elijah yeah. are. and hearing about what is to come. They're so profoundly impacted. Peter's calling out, let's build shelters, Lord. Not only that, they get to hear the voice of heaven. I mean, they are getting the fullness of God's love, his presence, his glory, his name, everything that could be made known in that moment. And they're close to God. They're present with Jesus. And the world is pretty distant. And they just want to stay. Okay? They come off the holy mountain, and they began to enter the crowds. And the first thing that happens, what happens?
Somebody running to them with a need.
Immediately.
Yeah.
So instead of basking in the presence of God, it is in the moment of need. I mean, it's like instant. And it's not just any need. It is a fall down on your knees, desperate need. Mm-hmm. And not only is it a fall down on your knees, desperate, it is a cry saying, I brought him to your disciples.
And they couldn't.
The ones, you know, you sent out two by two that you told in Matthew 10 that they could cast out demons in my name, that you have given them the authority.
The power. Mm-hmm.
But they could not deliver my son from this demon. So they come from the holy hill of the mountain of the glory of the Lord and what God's going to do to the fullness of the need and the lack of faith that is going on earth in the valley. Okay, that is what I want in our mind, the difference between the high holy hill and the valley. And one time, and you guys, I know you all have heard me say this many times, but when Greg and I were traveling in Arkansas and we were up in the mountains and it was sharp and cold and it's lonely in the mountaintop. And when we came down to the valley, I noticed in the valley that it was rich soil and fruitful. And I told my husband, I said, really, the valley gets a bad rap because that is where fruit's born. And this story is a perfect example of Jesus wanting them to see the fruit that needs to be born in them. He wants them to grasp this. So as we're looking at this today, I want you to be thinking through the difference between the mountaintop and the valley experience. Okay, so here we have this father. How would you describe the dad?
Desperate.
Yeah.
Okay.
He loves his son. He'll do anything to help him.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, and you know that because he has gone to the disciples.
He's not giving up.
Yeah.
They couldn't do it, so he's now going further and saying, help him.
Okay, that's good. That's good. I read a quote by Barclay, and let me put my glasses on because I wrote it down. I want to make sure I get it right. He says, but true religion is for man to rise from the knees before God to meet man and the problem of humanity. So what happens is that oftentimes we think that the holiest thing is on the mountaintop when we're in prayer. But the test is that when we hit humanity and reality, how we act out upon what we've prayed. And praying through this and asking God, because I was very convicted in my heart this morning that it's very easy for me to become rote with that which is of God. Okay? Jesus told them in Matthew, I think it was Matthew 10, 1, he says, that I have given you all authority to heal, to cast out demons, and then he sent them out with the two by two. They had that in them. And they had already done it. We were told in other passages they've already cast out, but this time they didn't. And it's very easy for us to all of a sudden allow that which we have been given to become routine or
in a comfort zone,
complacent comfort zone, or an expectation of mandatory, I say it must be. And instead of placing our heart where it needed to be. And so there's a challenge here that's going to come for the disciples that we're going to focus in on. And so we'll look at that. And that'll be like something that will unfold over the next 3 days. The other thing I wanted to describe for me the little boy. What was it like for the little boy? What do your different translations say? Because some say different things. And so I want to hear what the different translations
Mine says he was an epileptic that suffers severely, and he was often would fall into the fire or into water.
Okay. Does yours say epileptic?
Mine just says he has seizures and suffers.
Okay.
And he often falls into the fire and water.
Okay. Mine's seizures also.
Okay. My translation used seizures as well. Some say demon.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The implication is that culturally, in their day, they believed that the word, actual Greek word that's used is moonstruck.
Uh-huh.
And they believed that insanity would come with the phases of the moon.
Hmm.
And so superstition would be is that if he was being thrown into the water or into the fire, the moon phase must be changing. And so it's kind of almost like a superstitious kind of belief around also what was going on. One commentator said the description that is given is so intense that we need to understand that this was not a common, simple demon. Okay, this was a demon that had a stronghold, a demon that was not easily dealt with. Mm-hmm. It was a demon that had a tighter fist on this child. And we want to make sure that we clarify, this does not mean that people who have epilepsy have demons.
Mm-hmm.
That is not what the passage is saying.
Mm-hmm.
It was this descriptive word that was used to describe how the boy acted.
Seizures. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's not saying that that mental condition is something that it comes from demonic influence. And so we want to make sure that that's clear that in the description. And so we have a desperate father and a little boy that is being thrown all over the place.
Mm.
He's in great suffering. And so they bring him to Jesus, and Jesus has a very strong response. And so he comes up and he begins the process of dealing with the situation. And this was profound for me. Would somebody read for us the Jesus's exact words? Tanya, would you go ahead and just read what Jesus says to them, and
yep,
we'll pull that apart.
Jesus answered and said, "O faithless and perverse generation, how long shall I be with you? How long shall I bear with you? Bring him here to me."
Okay.
Mm.
Did anybody feel like those were really strong?
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of intense.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of scared me. I was like, wow, where did that come from?
And mine says faithless people.
Yep, says yeah, mine.
Mine says unbelieving and rebellious.
Mm.
And so the approach that he is using this is at the disciples. This is not at the Father.
Oh, no.
Okay, this is not to those that are out there. And in order to understand this, what we have to understand, in Matthew 10, when Jesus began the process of sending them out two by two, he began to draw away from the crowd ministry, and he's pulling it down to the 12 ministry. Up on the Mount of Transfiguration, he had three. Mm-hmm. That meant nine of them remained down on earth that should have been about the business of going about two by two, doing what he asked them to do, to preach, to teach, to heal, and to cast out demons. They were given that authority, okay? They've been shown what they need to do. They've been told, they've been given the ability, and they didn't.
Mm.
And these are the men that he is preparing for when he is in Jerusalem. And so his response is strong because there is an important lesson, and that's where we need to stay. It just hit me hard. I'm like, okay, if I'm unbelieving, it means that I don't believe, and that's the faithless. If I'm rebellious, that means I'm not obedient. I was mm-hmm. trying to flip it over to see what it is that I need to have in me. And he's been present with them. He's, how long have I been with you? How long have I been with you? He's present with them. And he goes, but he also reminds them, I'm not going to be with you much longer. You got to get this, because I've been with you, you've seen, but I'm not always going to be physically here, so you need to get it right. And so I listed it out. Jesus's words were powerful and authoritative. And when you think of somebody with power and authority, what does that conjure up in your mind? Do you expect things to be completed?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
All right. It's his spoken words. Okay. And so I want you to get this. Go back and let's look at the, they bring the boy in. He says, how long? And then they bring the boy. And Jesus, they bring the boy to him. So I'm going to do it with this. He says, Jesus rebuked the demon, mm-hmm. and it came out of the boy, and he was healed from that moment. So Jesus' words, it was a rebuke, a release, and a restoration. And so what they weren't getting, he was showing them what it is that he's wanting to have happen in them, a rebuke, a release, and a restoration. So as he is acting upon it with them, you got to understand it's also acting upon their hearts. Mm-hmm. And so their lack of belief,
that's awesome.
And their disobedience is the reason why things, because they're not trusting his presence. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, Lord. You know, we're confounded in this world because we think that a person's spiritual walk is determined by age. I can't tell you how often I'm confronted with that, even within myself, and that, you know, I assume if I'm sitting next to somebody who is 90 years old that came to know Christ at 16 years of age, that this should be a spiritual giant. But the reality is that if this person has not walked in obedience, that person's spirituality is determined by their obedience. Their spiritual age is obediently defined. Mm-hmm. Jesus is wanting them to understand something here. Faith is not defined by quantity. It's defined by quality. Mm. Okay? And it's the same thing that defines our spiritual ability defines our faith maturity. Does that make sense? Do you remember we talked about little faith and little faith? You remember that lesson?
Big L and little L.
That was the difference. And where was that? I'm going to go back and I'm going to pull it up in my book because we went through the whole process of looking at the differences between little faith and little faith. And so we talked about how little faith with a lowercase l didn't focus in on the Lord, and it wasn't based on faith, whereas the little faith, it's a capital L, it begins in Christ, mm-hmm. and its focus is on the Lord. And that's what he's trying to catch in their hearts. They still haven't gotten it, and they're still in need of it. And this was when Peter was walking on water, and mm-hmm. here yet they're still trying to get this down. And so we're going to have you come back next week, and we're going to look at how our failures are not Christ's failures. Christ will never fail. A disciple can fail, but Christ can't. And we'll look at how little faith affects that. God bless.